up and went to the kitchen. She called her children in, and we all started eating. When it came time to go, me and Ma hung back till everyone else had left. Once they'd got to talking, Ma and Mrs. Holton found out they were both from the same state down in America, and the plantations they were trapped on were a couple of miles one from another. They could even call the names of some of the same people from back there. But it was all white people, 'cause the people who were slaves weren't allowed to go from place to place. We were on the front stoop, and I was pulling my brogans on. Ma and Mrs. Holton hugged, and Ma said, "Sister Emmeline, please, if you find yourself needing anything, come see me, or send word through Eli or Leroy." Mrs. Holton said, "Thank you, Sister Sarah. Small world, ain't it? It sure is comforting to know we's from the same place. I'm gonna be all right. I's just relieved to know what happened, that's all. Ain't too much harder nor more wearying to keep up than false hopes, and I'm glad they gone. Only thing is, I can't get them words Miss Poole wrote out my head. His body could not endure. It don't seem to be right. It don't seem like them should be the last words spoke about John Holton." Ma said, "Well, the body don't never endure, do it? But I hopes, no, I knows that something inside all of us be so strong it can't be stopped. It fly on forever." Mrs. Holton said, "Sister Sarah, your words been a big comfort to me. And you and all the other Buxton sisters been a big help. Thank you kindly, and thank you kindly, Elijah, for reading this letter. Me and your ma is going to be doing that on our own for too much longer." Ma laughed and said, "You got more faith than me, Emmeline. This reading and writing seem to be two of them things what don't come easy once you's full grown. Ain't nothing to do but struggle on, though." Whilst me and Ma were walking home, I was about to bust, waiting on her to tell me how I did. You can't never be sure till you get the word from someone that's grown. But I was thinking what I just did was a pretty good sign that my days of being fragile were over. I hadn't cried, nor let my voice get shakety, nor even sniffled whilst I was reading the letter to Mrs. Holton. I weren't going to tell Ma, but I didn't think it was being grown that got me through it. Mostly I think I didn't bawl, 'cause once Ma and them women bunched up round Mrs. Holton with their watching, waiting eyes and hands, it felt like a whole slew of soldiers was ringing that parlor with swords drawed, and weren't no sorrow so powerful it could bust through. Once them women bunched up like that in Mrs. Holton's parlor, it seemed like they'd built a wall of Jericho round us, and 100 Joshuas and 1,000 children couldn't have knocked the wall down if they'd blowed trumpets and shouted till their throats burst. Once them women bunched up in that parlor round me and Mrs. Holton, I couldn't have cried even if I was fragile as Emma Collins. But I was hoping Ma would peg it on me being groaned. We were near about home afore she wrapped her arm round my neck and pulled me into her and said, "Elijah Freeman, I knowed you could do it, baby. What you done was real grown, son. Wait till I tell your daddy." I felt so proud, I was afeard I'd bust. But all that happened was that same stuff in my nose commenced to loosening up and slopping round all over again. And that don't make no sense. That don't make no sense at all.
Chapter 14. Picnic at Lake Erie.
Mr. Travis, when he's being our Sabbath school teacher, says the Lord rested on Sunday and commanded us to do the same. But doggone it all, that's one lesson that ain't sticking too good with him and all the other grown folks, 'cause half of every Sunday ain't spent resting. It's spent in church. And whilst Ma and Paul say church ain't work, some of the time if I had my druthers, I'd druther clean 5 stables and dig 2 miles of drainage ditch and clear 3 acres of woodland than sit through a whole morning and afternoon of church. There are only 2 reasons that this Sunday was about halfway tolerable. I ain't trying to show no disrespect, 'cause everyone in Buxton says he's either the best or the second best white man God created. But the first reason was 'cause Reverend King was still away in England, and Mr. Travis was preaching instead of him. Whilst I ain't disagreeing that Reverend King's a mighty good man, after all, he is the one that started the settlement, I am saying his sermons go on so long that some of the time you feel like begging, "Take me now, Jesus," about halfway through them. The second reason this Sunday's church was middling tolerable was 'cause right after services, Ma and Paul had arranged with Mrs. Segee to borrow the buckboard and one of the plow horses to carry a bunch of us children and Mrs. Holton down to Lake Erie for a picnic. Mr. Travis gave the final amen, which was about the only one that me and Cuda could put any enthusiasm into. And folks walked out and shook Mr. Travis's hand at the front door, where he stood to ambush everyone. I held back, not wanting to go through the door at the same time as Ma and Pa. Seeing us together like that seemed to be one of the main things that got Mr. Travis confused about if he's your regular school teacher or your Sabbath school teacher. Afore you know it, he's forgot he's supposed to be rested on Sunday and starts in telling Ma and Pa about how bad you're doing in Latin. Me, Cuda, Emma Collins, and Philip Wise were the last ones out of the church. When we got to where Mr. Travis was blocking the door, me and Cuda lied at the same time. "Very good sermon today, sir." Mr. Travis raised his eyebrow and said,
"Mr. Bixby, Mr. Freeman, in vestra latina maxime laborate."
Uh-oh. I didn't have notion the first what that meant. Seemed like he was thanking us for lying about his sermon. I said, "You're welcome, sir." Cuda said, "You're very welcome. We really mean it." Emma Collins coughed out a little laugh, and I knowed right away we'd messed up. We weren't even off the steps good when she said,
"He told you to, you need to work harder in Latin. He didn't say anything that you should answer with, 'You're welcome.'"
I didn't say a word to her. I gave her my best look of pity. This were nothing but more of the sin of envy chawing away at Emma Collins's heart. And the sad thing was, she let it happen right in front of the church. Paul had the buckboard and Cheryl, the biggest plow horse, waiting on the road. Him and Ma and Mrs. Holton were sitting on the bench, and Penelope and Cicely and Sidney Prince were sitting in the bed. Me, Cuda, and Emma greeted everyone, then climbed in. Instead of dangling my feet off the back or the side of the buckboard, I always leaned right against the middle of the bench. Not just 'cause that's where not a whole lot of bouncing goes on, but also 'cause it's a good place to be if you're interested in being right in the middle of some good eavesdropping. The land all the way from Buxton, 6 miles south of Lake Erie, belonged to the settlement, so the ride was going to be sort of long. Something about being in the back of the buckboard makes children forget the grown folks who are a couple feet away from them, and lots of things that shouldn't be told get said. But the same thing happens with the grown folks. They'll start in talking about something, and you can't believe your ears. After a while, it comes to you that they clean forgot that they were young folks right behind them, and things get said you ain't looking to hear. Some of the time, you end up coughing or clearing phlegm out of your throat to let them know you're there. But some of the time, you find out a lot of things they never come right out and tell you. On this Sunday, weren't much good conversating coming from the front nor the back of the buckboard. The children decided we were going to play abolitionists and slavers when we got to the beach and were arguing about which one each of us would be. Didn't no one want to be a slaver, because we always ended up killing him. That meant we had to draw straws to see who was going to be what. I ended up being an abolitionist, and Cuda was a slave. Up front, the conversating weren't interested neither. Seemed like they weren't going to talk about nothing but crops and rain, and which person got damaged by which horse. T'went long afore the clop of Cheryl's hoofs and the rocking of the buckboard in the noonday sun and Paul humming low all came together to make my head start feeling heavy and dozy. I knowed I was napping in and out, cause one time I'd opened my eyes and Emma and them were playing with dolls. Then the next time, they were all singing. The next time my eyes came up, everyone was getting antsy cause we started to smell the lake, and that meant we weren't no more a mile away. Paul was still humming, and Ma and Mrs. Holton were starting in on something the grown folks don't like talking about much in front of us, about the times they were slaves. I'd heard Ma's story afore, so I didn't have to look at her to know what she was doing as she talked. She'd keep her eyes closed, and her left hand would start moving like it came alive and was acting on its own. Her fingers would commence sliding back and forth twixt her left ear and her mouth like they were tracing over an invisible welt that got whooped into her. Which was peculiar, because when you studied Ma's face real good, you saw weren't no scar, nor whelp, nor mark of any kind. All you could see was Ma's smooth, dark brown skin. "Emmeline," she said, "I knows what you mean. They's got the strangest ways sometimes." Ma was talking about her own Ma and Pa, my grandfolks that I never met. Ma said, "I was just a little older than Elijah then. Mrs. Wright surprised us all one day by telling my mama that her and Massa was going to take me and Missy up north for the summer. Didn't give mama no warning, no nothing. Mrs. Wright just say to mama right out the blue that she was taking me. 15 minutes later, me and Missy loaded up with them on the wagon heading north." Mrs. Holton said, "They didn't say nothing aforehand, cause they was afeard your ma would have run with you." This was one of the parts you didn't want to hear. It's hard to picture your ma being gave to a little white girl to play with like a pet. But that's what happened. Ma had told me that back then, when she weren't working in the field, she was tending to this girl name of Missy. Ma said, "Mama ain't happy about it, but what can she do? We supposed to be gone for 3 months. I ain't never been away from Mama afore, so I scared to death. Kept thinking they were never gonna bring me back." Ma's hand would always quit moving at this part of the story. "Brung me right up to a little city in Michigan called Flint. Massa had a brother what owned a wood mill there, and some of the time we all go with him down to Detroit. I remember Mrs. Wright taking us to the river and pointing across and telling Missy, 'That there Canada, that a whole nother country fooled up with foreigners.'" Ma told Mrs. Holton, "I can't tell you how let down I was feeling when I looked over that water at Canada. He didn't look not one part different. Mama and all them other folks always saying how Canada's the land of milk and honey. But I can't see one thing different, and it ain't but a half mile off." Mrs. Holton said, "Ooh, girl, they told us the same thing, the land of milk and honey." Ma went on, "Anyway, felt to me like we stayed up in Flint for 2 whole years. But it was only 3 months before we start back on home. Took forever. 'Bout an hour outside Flint, Missy started axin' if we was home yet, and didn't quit axin' for days. When we in the wagon and 2 mile out from the plantation, I starts recognizing where we at. And I starts getting antsy as Missy. Mrs. Wright tell me, 'Sarah, quit acting the fool and set still.' I says, 'I sorry, ma'am. I just about to buzz from not seeing my mama.' Mrs. Wright tell me,
Well, you'll see her first thing tomorrow. There's still plenty light, and you can work in the barn. And tonight, I want you to stay with Missy. This traveling has her feeling out of sorts.
I knows it's back talk, but I says, please, ma'am, can't I see my mama for just a minute?
You'd have thought I asked her for the moon. She'd near backhand me out that wagon and say, you say one more word, and I'll keep you hopping for a week.
Mouse will tell her, Gwen, let that child go in the field and see her ma. I'm going to give her 15 minutes.
Mrs. Wright say, James, you're too soft on your pickaninnies. They's going to be the death of you one day. Mark my word.
Mrs. Holton said,
Ma said, I so happy. After I got Missy to bed, I told Mrs. Wright, and she look at a clock and say, you got 15 minutes. I'll cane you within an inch of your life if you's 1 second late.
Emmeline, I ain't never run so hard in all my life, afore nor since. I seen Mama bent over in the field by a half mile off, and I feel like I's flying to get to her. It was here that Ma's hand would commence rubbing her left cheek again. Mrs. Holton touched Ma's shoulder. Ma laughed and said, Lord, if I'd have known what was about to happen, I might not have been so anxious to see her. Mama heard me hollering and drop her load and run just as hard out at me. I feels like I's swimming, I's looking through so many tears. Ma's arms wrapped round herself. Ooh, did she mash me to her. She say, child, child, child. I pray every night you was gone that you come back and here you is. Look how much you groaned. She kissed me so much I weren't sure if my face was wet from tears or kisses. Then she asks what up north looked like. I say, like here, except there's more trees, and ain't no tobacco. Then I throw in, I seen Canada. Girl, soon as I say it, I knowed by how her body lock up that I done something wrong. First thing I'm thinking is that Mrs. Wright done snuck up behind me and hear me say Canada. We get beat if we even say it out loud. But that weren't it. Next thing I know, my mama's arm uncoiled like a rattling snake and she smote me down hard. She had never touched me afore with nothing but love. But Lord knows 'twere no love in that blow.
Mrs. Holton rubbed Ma's back harder. Ma said,
I quick jumps up, too scared and dumbstruck to even cry. And all I done was say, Mama, why? She look at me with eyes I ain't never seen on her afore. She say, what kind of fool I done raised? You was close enough to see Canada, and you standin' here afore me now?
I says to her, but Mama, if I'd left, I might not never see you no more.
She smote me the second time. Then she say, you done got took to the gates of heaven and turn yourself back 'cause you might not never see me again? What make you think I wants to see you down here knowing them?
Ma looked in the back of the buckboard and spelt out, them D-A-M things Massa got in store for you. Ain't you got no inkling what he waiting on you to get old enough for? How daft is you that seeing me be worth more than being rid of that? Ma said,
all I could say was, but Mama, I weren't thinking about it like that. All I could think about was seeing Mama snatch me by my collar and hold me so close to her face that I sees fire spitting out her eyes and I smells the food she ate for breakfast that morning and I feel spittle from her mouth. She say, girl, if them people ever take you north again and you don't try reaching Canada, I'm gonna make you a promise right here. I swears on all I love that I'll wring your neck myself and won't give it no more thought than if I was wringing the neck of one of them chickens. 'Cause if they takes you to Detroit ever again and you don't head out for Canada, You ain't got no more right to live than one of them chickens. You ain't got no more sense than one of them yard birds what's happy to hang around till that they turn to get slaughtered. If you get another chance and don't take it, or die trying, I swear, girl, I'll kill you myself once you get back here. Ma quit moving her hand along her jaw and held up three fingers. That made three times she smacked me across the mouth. Ma smiled. I had sense enough to stay down after that. Folks come and pull Mama off me. I remember her screaming and crying and cursing me whilst they drag her back to work. I knowed she weren't lying. 'Twas 2 years afore they brought me to Detroit again, and I knowed when we was leaving in the wagon and I kissed my Mama that I weren't never going to see her again. Mrs. Holden kept rubbing Ma's back and said, "Sarah, I'm going to tell you some words a wise woman told me. Something inside so strong going to keep you flying." Ma hugged Mrs. Holden and said, "Ooh-wee. I hope you cherish that woman, 'cause she sure do sound wise." They laughed, and Mrs. Holden said, "Girl, I do. If only you knowed how much I do. I loves her like a sister." They stayed hugged up like that till Pa brung the wagon to a stop. Everyone was starved out from sitting in church all day, so we ate afore we played abolitionists and slavers. Folks were still bringing Mrs. Holton food to help in her mourning, and she brung lots of it along. Ma had fried some chicken and baked a couple of pies, too. We spread blankets and sat in the sand to eat. Being close to the water and hearing the lake slapping against the sand was about the peacefulest thing you could think of. If I hadn't drawed the long straw and got to be an abolitionist, I'd have ate and just sat there and dozed. But weren't no way I was going to give up killing some slavers, even if they were just Penelope and Sydney pretending to be white. Ma and Mrs. Holton gave us all big servings of good things. Then Ma carved up some pieces of her peach pie and dropped one on everybody's plate. About halfway through the meal, I saw Pa piling a little hill of sand out of a hole next to where he was sitting on the blanket. I didn't think nothing of it till about 5 minutes later, when he pointed at some gigantic poplar trees and said, "Is that one of them bald-haired eagles?" Most times, those eagles don't come inland far as Buxton, so we all looked over at the poplars. No one saw nothing, so Paul said, "I think y'all scared him when you jumped up like that." I looked at Paul and saw that the hole he'd been digging was gone. He'd pushed all the sand back in it. Then I saw that the piece of Ma's peach pie was gone, too. Paul could tell I put one and one together and knowed where the pie was at. He leaned in to me and whispered, "Now, before we leave, you come back over here, dig it up, then bury it real deep somewhere. It ain't right to leave it halfway buried so some poor, desperate, starving wild animal might dig it up and try to digest it and suffer a horrible, slow death." I couldn't help laughing. But then Cooter and them ran off behind the bluff, and he hollered back, "Help! Is there any abolitionists round? I'm about to get dragged back to slavery by these here slavers. Help!" I asked to be excused so's I could run after Cooter and kill me some slavers.
Chapter 15. Keeping Mr. John Holton Alive.
A few days later, after supper, one of Mrs. May's twins came banging on the door. I answered.
"Evening, Eli."
"Evening, Eb. Mr. Leroy told me to come here and tell you not to go direct to Mrs. Holton's land tonight." This was peculiar. I was supposed to help him again. "Did he say how come?" Eb said,
"Uh-uh. You know Mr. Leroy. He never has much of anything to say. All he said was to tell you to come by the sawmill first."
"Thank you, Eb. Tell your Ma and Pa I asked about him." When I got to the sawmill, Mr. Leroy and Mr. Polite were sitting next to a fresh-cut hunk of wood about 4 foot long and 1 foot wide. Mr. Polite said, "Here we be. Evening, Eli." "Evening, Mr. Polite." "Evening, Mr. Leroy." Mr. Leroy said,
"Evening, Elijah. I want you to look over this here writing before I starts carving it. Mrs. Holton wants to go over her door, and I ain't carving nothing for no one unless somebody what reads tells me it makes sense. Folks ask you to carve something, then when you do it like they want, and someone reads it to them, and it ain't nothing but jibber-jabber, they say they ain't gonna pay. And I don't waste all that time, so see if this here is sensical."
I could tell Mr. Leroy was mighty worked up about this. That was a whole month's worth of talking for him. He handed me a piece of paper that had rough writing and lots of cross-outs on it. I read, "These words is done so no one will never forget the loving memory of my husband, John Holton, who got whipped to death and killed on May the 7th, 1859, just 'cause he want to see what his family look like if they free. He be resting calm knowing his family done got through. The body won't never endure, but something inside all of us be so strong it always be flying." I said to Mr. Leroy, "Sir, some of these things do need to get changed. How long you gonna let me ponder on this before I gotta tell you?" Mr. Polite said, "Ponder? It seemed to me, if you was really some good at reading and writing, you wouldn't need no time to ponder nothing. Just change it up, 'cause it ain't ringing right to my ear." He turned to Mr. Leroy. "I told you, Leroy, we should have got that little Collins gal. That's one bright child there. This boy ain't too far from being daft." Mr. Leroy said,
"Hold on, Henry. The boy say he needs some time. I'm gonna let him take his time. Mrs. Holton already suffered a lot. She don't need to be suffering no more 'cause of some jibber-jabber was carved over her door."
I showed Ma and Pa the paper Mrs. Holton had writ, and they told me it was a great honor to do this, that I had to do the best job I could. Pa said,
"You're gonna have to help her take some of the bite out of them words, Elijah. A pain too fresh to be locking it up so hot and writing."
Ma told me, "Poor Mr. Leroy gonna be coughing for years to get all that down. But look, baby, some of them words is mine." I thought on it for the rest of the week. I filled pages and pages in my notebook, working on just the right words for Mrs. Holton. I thought about it when I was supposed to be studying and when I was supposed to be doing chores. It even creeped up on me and made my rock fishing go real unpleasant for both me and the fish. I only chunked 4 out of 20. Worst, I sent 2 of them wobbling back into the water with their brains scrambled like eggs. After about a week, Mr. Leroy's patience ran out and he said,
"I'm starting to agree with Henry Polite. It don't seem like changing some words round going to take all this time. Mrs. Holton been wondering where her son's at. After your supper, come to the field and have them words ready so as I can get started and write them down clear, too."
It killed my appetite, but I finally got something written down just after supper. Before I gave it to Mr. Leroy, I ran over to Mr. Travis's home so he could see if there were any big mistakes. Mr. Travis changed 2 words, crossed out 3, put in some better punctuating, then said,
"Admirable job, Mr. Freeman. Admirable job."
Ma and Pa said it seemed pretty good to them, and when I told the words to Mr. Leroy, he didn't do nothing but grunt, which was saying a whole lot for him. It took him a while to carve all the letters in the wood, and the day it was finished, he showed it to me. It was beautiful. He said,
"She real partial to having things done fancy. Don't want nothing plain. So I put some decorating on it."
In the first 3 corners of her sign, he'd carved a tree, a bird, and some waves. In the 4th corner, he put the sun and the moon. He even carved a ribbon to go round all the words, and you'd have swore it was real. Mr. Leroy let me carry it down to Mrs. Holton's so we could put it over her door. Soon's he drove the first nail into the wood over her door, Mrs. Holton came out to see what the commotion was.
"Good afternoon, Leroy. Good afternoon, Elijah."
Me and Mr. Leroy both said, "Afternoon, ma'am." Mr. Leroy told her,
"I'm sorry, Sister Emmeline. I had the boy change them words round some. It was too long afore."
She stepped outside, looked back up at the sign, and said,
"Oh, what'd it say now?"
I read it to her, and she smiled and said, "That's just what I wanted it to say, Elijah. Thank you kindly. And thank you kindly, Mr. Leroy, for doing such a good job. I like the way you put them things in the corners. Make it look important. Pardon me for a minute."
Mrs. Holton went back inside her home. I figured she was getting some money to pay Mr. Leroy. But when she came back, she was holding on to a fancy carved box. She reached into the front of her apron and gave me a whole nickel. She gave me money for coming up with words on a piece of paper. I squeezed it tight in my hand and said, "Thank you, ma'am." But even before I could slide it down in my pocket, I could hear what Ma and Pa would say. I opened my palm and reached the nickel back to Mrs. Holton. I said, "I ain't allowed to take no one's money, ma'am." She wrapped her hand round my fingers so the nickel was folded back up in my fist. "Elijah, I insists. If you ain't gonna take it, I'm gonna throw it out in the yard. I'll tell your ma I made you."
That was good enough for me.
Ma and Pa would think throwing money away was worse than taking it for doing someone a favor, so I didn't have nothing to worry about. Then Mrs. Holton looked at Mr. Leroy and said, "Sir, this here's for you." She reached the wood box at him. Mr. Leroy wrinkled his forehead for a bit, then said,
"Sister Emmeline, I appreciate you giving me this here box. It's some fine work. And in light of your loss, I must say we's even. But from now on, I can't be dealing in nothing but money. Sorry if I'm seeming bold, ma'am. I ain't intending to. But I know with you having someone what was slaved down home, you understand."
Mrs. Holton said, "I understand. Here, open the box." Mr. Leroy took the box, pulled the lid off, and both him and me sucked in the air like we got dunked in a barrel of cold water. His hands commenced shaking. He busted out in a sweat and looked like his belly was aching him bad. He grabbed a hold of his left arm, then whispered,
"Mrs. Holton, what's this?"
Mrs. Holton said, "It's $2,200 in gold, Mr. Leroy. It's what I was going to buy John Holton with. You need it more than me now." Mr. Leroy couldn't talk. His legs melted from under him, and he ended up in a heap on Mrs. Holton's stoop. He said,
"Mrs. Holton, this here be my wife and both my children. I can't turn this down."
"I ain't expecting you would." She walked over to where he fell, and he wrapped his arms round her legs like a drowning man holding on to a tree in a flood. He kept on mumbling,
"I can't turn it down. I can't turn it down."
It was something terrible to see. In two shakes of a lamb's tail, all the groanness I'd been showing lately flew off like ducks off of a pond, and I was a fragile boy all over again. Seeing someone strong and tough as Mr. Leroy crying made me feel like everything was turned topsy-turvy. Next thing you knowed, All three of us were bawling on Mrs. Holton's stoop. She pulled me into her, and we were a doggone pathetic sight. Mr. Leroy said, "Sister Emmeline, I done already save $1,192.85. I ain't gonna need all this, but I swear I'm gonna pay you back. I swear it. And you ain't never gonna have to worry about no work being done on your land for the rest of your life." Mr. Leroy didn't even wipe the tears away. He was crying, but started smiling at the same time. "You ought to see my old Ezekiel. He was a big strapping boy when I last seen him 4 years ago, and now he be 15. He must be big as an oak. Me and him both gonna be at your beck and call, ma'am, I swear it. We gonna pay back every cent. Thank you. Thank you." Mrs. Holton said, "Mr. Leroy, I ain't got no doubt you gonna pay me back. But hearing that Liberty Bell toll when your wife and babies walk into Buxton gonna be near payment enough itself." She sniffed into the kerchief she was holding and said, "Elijah, read what them words is to me one more time." I toiled on them so long, I didn't even have to look at the sign above Mrs. Holton's door. I swallowed down some of the looseness in my nose and said what was on the sign. "For the love of my husband, John Holton, who passed on May 7th, 1859, but still lives. The body is not made to endure. There's something inside so strong, it flies forever." She said, "That's it, Elijah. Son, you done told the truth." I think all three of us figured the other two weren't going to quit bawling till we busted up one from another. Mrs. Holton was the first to untangle herself from the crying party when her two children saw what was going on and commenced bawling too. She kissed me and Mr. Leroy on our heads, then closed her door kind of gentle. I was next to leave. It was getting late, and I didn't want no trouble from Ma, so I left Mr. Leroy sitting on one of the steps with his face pressed down on that box. I ran all the way home to tell Ma and Pa the good news.
Chapter 16. The Preacher Comes Through.
The next morning there was a knock on our front door. I heard Pa invite Mr. Leroy in, so I went to give him my regards. "Morning, Pa. Morning, Mr. Leroy." Both of them said, "Morning, Elijah." Mr. Leroy was holding his hat in his hand and looking like he'd got dragged through four rat holes. He said to Pa,
"Spencer, I got some business I need to talk with you."
Pa said,
"Elijah, excuse yourself."
Mr. Leroy said,
"No, Spencer, me and Elijah's working partners. The boy handles himself like he's grown, so I hope you don't mind if he stay."
If I lived to be 50, I was going to remember this. The first time I got called grown. I wasn't expecting this to happen for 6 or 7 months yet. Pa said,
"Suit yourself, Leroy."
He sat in the rocker and pointed at the soft chair for me. Mr. Leroy said,
"I don't know if Elijah told y'all what happened."
Pa didn't let him know one way or another. He rocked the chair gentle and said,
"What's that, Leroy?"
I sure was proud of Pa right then. It wasn't until Mr. Leroy asked him that question that my mind told me in a flash that maybe I shouldn't have told Ma and Pa what happened. Maybe Mr. Leroy would have been shamed if I was telling folks he took Mrs. Holton's gold. But Pa didn't let on that I'd run my mouth. Mr. Leroy said,
"Wouldn't have been no worry to me if he did tell, Spencer. Y'all raised him proper, and I know the boy liked to talk, but he ain't no gossip. I know there's things what children have to tell their folks.
This being groaned was a lot harder than it looked. I couldn't make heads nor tails out of how Paul knowed not to say nothing about me telling, and how Mr. Leroy knowed that that was what I was worrying about. Mr. Leroy said,
Mrs. Holton done lent me enough money to buy my wife and children, Spencer.
Paul said,
Leroy, that sure is powerful good news.
Then Mr. Leroy went and ruined all this grown-up talk for me. He said,
Yes, Spencer, I don't know how I can ever, how I'm going ever.
And he commenced bawling again. He covered his face with his hat and sobbed. And I'll be blamed if that didn't set me off. Paul looked at me and tipped his head toward my bedroom. I left the room and stayed out of sight, but I was still close enough for listening. After all, Mr. Leroy did say I handled myself like I was grown. And I know grown folks don't like nothing better than doing a little eavesdropping. Paul didn't say a word. I heard the rocking chair squeaking on the floor at the same rhythm it was afore Mr. Leroy commenced crying. Paul just waited till Mr. Leroy got back in his right mind. After a while, Mr. Leroy said,
I apologize for that, Spencer. I ain't got no sleep all night. Seems my mind running five different ways at once. Now that I know my family coming, seems like my mind trying to plague me with every horrible thing what might happen.
Paul said,
No need for no apologies, Leroy. These is trying times for you.
Mr. Leroy's voice was shaking whilst he talked, like he was in the buckboard on a bad road. He said,
I done worked day and night for 4 years.
4 years?
I didn't reckon on having enough money for another 2 years yet, Spencer. I was going to buy Ezekiel out first. Then him and me working together could buy out my wife and daughter. But Mrs. Holton's money changed all that. I ain't ready for this. I don't know who I can get to arrange getting my family out. You still got any dealings with them Underground Railroad folks?
Paul said,
Leroy, we can get this done.
I'm going to talk to some people in Chatham and see what we got to do. Don't you worry.
We'll get this done.
Just then, I heard the preacher's voice coming through the screen door.
Spencer? I saw your door was open. Y'all up already?
Paul jumped out of his chair quick-like and went to the door. He said,
Morning, Zeph.
Paul walked out onto the stoop and pulled the door shut behind him. I couldn't hear what all they were saying. After a while, Mr. Leroy called out,
Spencer, if you don't mind, could you call him on in?
Paul and the preacher came into the parlor.
Why, morning, Leroy. I missed hearing your acts this morning. Thought you must have been taking a break today.
Mr. Leroy said,
No, Zephariah. It's a mighty beautiful day. I got the money to buy my family.
The preacher called out,
Praise Jesus! This is a beautiful day. I can see now why you're looking so out of sorts.
Mr. Leroy said,
We was discussing how's the best way to get my family out.
The preacher said,
What did you decide?
Paul said,
I know some folks in Chatham what can handle this.
The preacher said,
Not the Abrams boys.
Paul said,
Why, yes, they's the ones.
You must not have heard, Brother Spencer. Their Paul took ill over in New York, and they moved back there about 6 months ago.
The preacher gave a long sigh, then said,
I guess the best thing to do is wait on the next people from the railroad that come through. It's been a while, but I don't imagine it's going to be much longer, 3-4 months at the most.
Mr. Leroy must have been thinking just like me.
3 or 4 months might as well have been 3 or 4 years. I heard the chair he was sitting in scrape on the floor as he jumped out of it. Mr. Leroy said, "I can't wait that long. There's got to be a quicker way." Paul said,
"I don't know, Leroy. This is something you've been waiting on a long while. We best give it a little more time so we can do it right."
"But 3, 4 months? No. That's way too long. I ain't told no one this, and I appreciate y'all not saying nothing, but I ain't been feeling myself this past year. Seems I'm ailing all the time and can't shake it. Why, Spencer, I don't know if I got 3, 4 months.
The preacher laughed and said, "Brother Leroy, you're just working yourself too hard. You're strong as a mule. No one who was sick could swing an axe the way you do."
Mr. Leroy said, "Zephariah, I can't wait. Maybe if you'd come with me, I could go over to America, to Detroit, and talk to some people there. I know they got white folks would help with this."
Paul said, "Leroy, I don't think..." The preacher said, "Why, you know what? Now that you mention Michigan, I recall there's this little logging village less than an hour outside of Detroit. It's where the white man lives that helped Mrs. Lewis buy her husband down in South Carolina. I know him personally. John Jarvie. He's a mighty good white man."
Mr. Leroy said, "I remember that. About 4 years ago. He's still there?"
"Leroy, I was there 2 months ago. Had supper at his place. You caught me by surprise, else I would have remembered him right off. He's still making arrangements to buy folks, too. Does it himself. Pretends he's buying slaves for his own plantation, then spirits them to Michigan."
Mr. Leroy said, "That's one of the things what I've been most afeard of. I know that Master Dillon found out it was me what was buying my family. He'd double up the price, or wouldn't sell him at all." "Zephariah, you's our answered prayer."
The preacher said, "Nah, Leroy, this is something that's meant to be. The Lord's putting all the pieces together for you here. He's rewarding your good works. He's seeing you get what you deserve." Paul hadn't said nothing. But soon as I heard the preacher say the word "deserve," I knowed Paul was going to be mighty set against this. According to Paul, "deserve" is another one of those rattling snake words. Words that always get followed by a nasty bite. Mr. Leroy said,
"Zephariah, you think you could get in touch with this here man and make the arrangements?"
The preacher said, "Leroy, you know I'm hurt. You think you have to ask me to do this? You think I haven't been considering this very second how I can rearrange some of my business so that I can take care of this matter right away?"
Mr. Leroy said, "No offense intended, Zeph. I ain't had no sleep in a while, and I'm worried something terrible."
The preacher said, "I understand.
But you do know Mr. Jarvie is going to have expenses, right?" "How much is here man gonna want, Zeph? How much you gonna need yourself to do it?"
The preacher said, "Personally, I don't want anything. I'd pay to have your family come walking into the settlement whilst the Liberty Bell rings. And Mr. Jarvie is a sure enough good white man. He never charges anyone more than what it costs him. I can't say right off, but I'm thinking I should go carrying $100 or so for his expenses, plus whatever it is you need to buy your family."
I'd know just what the preacher looked like when he all of a sudden shouted out,
Praise God! I haven't heard words as beautiful as by your family in years, Brother Leroy. I'd note he raised his arms above his head and was waving them at the roof. Paul still hadn't said nothing, but it was like I could hear him frowning as the talk went more and more. Mr. Leroy said,
"How soon before we can get this started?"
The preacher said, "I'm leaving right now to postpone the business I had in Chatham. If you have everything together, I can get going by this very afternoon, early evening at the latest." Mr. Leroy said,
"I got some extra set aside, Zev. I ain't asking you to do this for nothing."
The screen door opened, and the preacher called back in, "Leroy, I have no intention of profiting from anyone's misery, especially not someone as respected as you. I'm going to see if I can make arrangements with Mr. Segee to borrow a horse. The sooner we get this done, the sooner that Liberty Bell will be tolling." I walked back into the parlor, and Paul didn't tell me to leave. He started right in on Mr. Leroy.
"Leroy, this here's moving too fast. You got to be careful. That's a lot of money you talking about to buy your family, and money can make folks do some crazy things."
Mr. Leroy said,
"Moving too fast? Spencer, I've been waiting 4 years for this. 4 years. Ain't nothing fast about none of this. As if is right. Things just don't fall in place like this for no reason at all. There's something behind all this. Something was trying to bring righteousness into it."
Paul said,
"I advise caution, Leroy. I ain't trying to badmouth no one. But how much we really know about Zephaniah? Other than him calling himself a preacher, I ain't seen nothing really holy about the man. You about to give him 5-6 years worth of money. That's a powerful temptation to anyone."
Mr. Leroy said,
"Sometimes you just gotta have faith, Spencer. Sometimes you got to believe."
Paul said, "I'm talking about what's right in front of our eyes. What we know, not no beliefs. We know Zeph don't live in the settlement. We know he don't work regular. We know he ain't round for long spells of time. He's toting that $100 pistol will come from God nowhere. We know he's smart as a whip, and we know he's young, real young. There's just too much what we need to ask before you give him all that money and all that responsibility." Mr. Leroy said,
"I hear you, Spencer. But like I said, sometimes you just got to believe."
Paul said, "This ain't so much about believing, Leroy. This more about you hankering for your family so much that you ain't looking at things clear. I ain't one to beg, but I'm begging you to think on this and not do nothing this fast. Zeph seems to be rushing this way too much." Mr. Leroy said,
"I done told you, Spencer. I ain't got no more time."
He looked at me and said,
"Elijah, you know Zephaniah. Can he be trusted?"
Paul said real quick before I had a chance to answer, "Leroy, it ain't the boy's place to make no judgment like that. He ain't but 11 years old. He can't look in no one's heart." Mr. Leroy stood up and said,
"Spencer, I done made up my mind. I know you doing what you think is right, and I do appreciate your concern, but I ain't got no other choice."
Paul stood up too, acting like he was going to block Mr. Leroy's way out of the house. They looked hard at one another. My breathing stopped. Paul finally said,
"All right then. But just let me do one thing. One thing that will help set my mind at ease."
Mr. Leroy said,
"Long as it don't delay nothing, I's listening."
Paul said, "All I'm axing is that you don't send Zephariah alone with all that money. Let's get someone else to ride alongside him, someone we all trust. Mr. Leroy thought for a second, then said,
I don't see no harm in that.
Who? Paul said,
You nor me can't go. We ain't got no papers, and Michigan's still crawling with patterollers.
But Theodore Highgate's got his manumission papers, and his hand ain't all the way healed yet, so he ain't doing no heavy work in no way. Let's ax him. Mr. Leroy said,
He a good choice.
Paul opened the screen door and stepped outside to put his shoes on. He said,
You wait here, Leroy. I'm gonna be right back. Promise me you ain't gonna do nothing till I get back.
Hurry back, Spencer. I'm going to wait.
Paul ran off toward the Highgates' home. Mr. Leroy sat back down and said to me,
Elijah, maybe your Paul's right. Maybe I shouldn't be trusting Zeph like this.
He grabbed both my arms and looked at me hard and said,
You don't spend more time with him than near about anyone else. You think he'd thief my money?
I had to ponder over this. By asking me this grown folks question, Mr. Leroy was giving me a lot of respect and responsibility, so I didn't want to rush into answering him. I didn't want to say nothing wrong, so I thought on it hard. I remembered all the things that the preacher'd done that didn't seem right. I remembered him jack-legging my fish. I remembered him telling confusing tales to the new free folks. I remembered him thinking about making me travel with that conjurer, Sir Charles. All those bad things came right to mind. But then I remembered all the good things he'd done, too. Like freeing the real Malwi, and searching in the woods when those patterollers came and letting everyone in Buxton know I'd been gave gifts from the Lord. So I had to own up that he did have a good heart. What on earth could be worse than stealing money that's supposed to buy someone's kin out of slavery? Sure, I've seen the preacher do some bad things, but I didn't think no one could ever do nothing that low down and rotten. The preacher's heart weren't that bad. Could no one that knowed how hard Mr. Leroy worked ever do nothing like that to him? Couldn't no one but a demon be that cold-hearted? And even if the preacher had a whole boatload of things that'd make you wonder, could no one say he weren't a man? Mr. Leroy gave me a shake and said,
Son, you think that man would thief my money?
I told him, No, sir. I don't think the preacher would never do that. Never. Mr. Leroy didn't say nothing more. He turned me a-loose and watched out the window. 'Twent long afore Paul came busting in. He said,
Theodore say he be honored to help carry your money to Michigan.
Mr. Leroy and Paul and me shook hands all round. I heard a horse riding hard and ran out on the stoop. The preacher was on Champion and pulled him up out front of our home. He said,
Brother Leroy still here, Elijah?
Yes, sir. Paul and Mr. Leroy came out on the stoop. The preacher said,
Brother Leroy, get the money together, and I'll be back as soon as I can. Now that I got this horse, it won't take me near as long.
Paul said,
Hold on a minute, Zeph. Theodore Highgate's gonna go to Michigan with you.
I saw a flash in the preacher's eyes, but he said,
Why, that'd be fine. It's going to slow things down a bit, but that would be just fine.
Mr. Leroy said,
I done thought about it, Zeph, and it'd be best if both y'all watches over all that money. Y'all can protect each other's back.
The preacher jumped off a Champion and said,
Is that all that's worrying you, Leroy? Because if you're nervous about me and that money, I don't care if all of Buxton comes along. I don't want you to have a worry at all about this. I want you to be rested and comforted in your